flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
There's one thing that will forever change the way you sleep, and it's the softest, 100% organic cotton bedding from Boll & Branch. You'll fall asleep faster, wrapped in the most luxurious comfort. You'll never sleep hot again with airy blankets, cloud-like duvets, and breathable sheets. You'll experience pure comfort on night one and feel your bedding get softer with every wash. Discover the difference with 15% off your first order at BollAndBranch.com with code ODYSSEY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates Personal Injury Law Firm, where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. You can communicate with our dear friend City Limits on there. And then we move to the fan hotline, presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years, with longtime Penguins observer, Penguins historian, Mr. Bob Grove. Grover, I haven't talked to you in a while. Welcome aboard. I started the show by talking about how that was really almost emotional for me watching late last night. It's a place where they won a cup. And the emotions were mixed between, wow, they've provided a lot to this town, and this is rock bottom. And that was symbolically it. They lost to the Sharks. Their effort was questionable. They've played 52 games and won 14 in regulation. They've doubled up the Sabres for worst goal differential in the East. They didn't mean to get to the bottom this quickly, Grover, but they're here. And my advice would be to embrace it from a fan perspective and from an organizational perspective, and try as best you can within the constraints of all these no movement clauses to tear it down to the studs. How do you feel?
Well, Joe, first of all, it's great to be on with you. It has been a while, and it's always good to talk hockey with you. I would not be in the position of, first of all, let me say, I agree with you about last night. I mean, outside the first 5 minutes, I mean, after two periods, they had just mailed it in. I mean, there's nothing else to say about it. It was atrocious. Second period was, I thought, the worst of the season for them. But I would not tear it down to the studs. Look, you've seen the teams that have done this. It's you trade every movable piece you can trade. And, you know, we're talking Anaheim, San Jose, the Hawks have done it. Let me tell you what, when you do that, you're not rebuilding in 3 or 4 years, Joe. It's going to take 7 or 8, probably. That's how long it takes. Now, we've seen teams turn it around quicker. I mean, you know, Dubas has talked about the Rangers in L.A. I mean, Washington's the most recent example, although they have some long-term injury help that's made that all possible for the Capitals. I wouldn't tear it all down, but I'd keep doing what Dubas is doing. And you just mentioned it at the top. One of the reasons why they can't tear it all down is they don't have control. A lot of these players, Dubas might come up with a great deal for somebody, and he'd want to do it, but he needs approval from the player, and he doesn't get it. So, where they're at right now is just in a very, very difficult place. But I think he needs to keep doing what he's doing, which is stockpiling picks, taking a shot on some young guys, and trying to make a trade that can really brand his rebuilding of the Penguins. He hasn't done it yet. You know, maybe it's the McGroarty deal, maybe not. But if you look at, you know, the way the Caps have done it, they've made some great trades that have really put them where they're at right now. So it's a difficult spot, but tearing it down all the way, tearing it down, everything down, is just not going to happen.
if there were a generational player at stake, would you advise that? Because let's be honest, tearing it down to the studs is what got the Penguins all of their Stanley Cups.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, the Penguins have been right. So the Penguins have had a lot of, as you know, Joe, a lot of fortune. And when they did this, you know, they tore it down right at the exact right time. So to get the players they got in the years you're talking about. But I mean, look, Buffalo's torn it down. Have they not? When's the last time they made the playoffs? Like, there's no look at the discontent in Chicago. They tore it all down. They got the guy they wanted in Bedard. And they're not showing any positive steps whatsoever. And I just mentioned Anaheim and San Jose as two examples of, look, yeah, loaded with young players, really good young players. But, you know, when you the next time they get into the playoffs, I don't know when it's going to be. It might actually be quicker for San Jose the way Celebrini plays. But, yeah, I just don't know. I wouldn't feel any differently about it. I mean, these are the cards that Dubas was dealt when he got here. He doesn't have a lot of control. He's got a million moves to make. He's got to try and restock the pipeline. And look, I mean, you got to give it to him. I mean, the Penguins, they've got 28 picks in the next three drafts, Joe. You know, so they're starting. The process is already a couple of years underway, and they just got to stay the course.
Yeah, I guess we could also quibble about what it means to tear it down to the studs, because certainly there are teams in the NHL that have bounced back to at least be in playoff position when they've really sunk to the bottom of the league. I mean, I'm looking back at standings, even 2019-20. The Red Wings lost 50 games that year. The Senators were horrible. The Devils had again sunk to the bottom of the league. So teams do sink to the bottom and build it back up, but I guess we could, you know, does that mean completely tearing apart everything? I don't know. So let's talk about one important piece in my mind, and that's Raquel. And I don't think the Penguins have any business keeping him. You're not, right now, you're not in the business of keeping 31, 32-year-old wingers at the height of their marketability just because Sid may want to play with him or he's working out well with Sid. I think you're doing your franchise a disservice. I think he might get you the best return of anybody who's available for the Penguins.
Yeah, a lot of it goes back to, you know, what that conversation with Sid's been over the last couple of years. And, you know, I think it's clear that that conversation has been like, we're not shipping everybody out the door. And I mean, and he's obviously okay with that, having just signed an extension. So, you know, you got to field a team next season, and you're going to trade Raquel. The only thing they got going for them offensively, Joe, is the top line. That's it. I mean, you know, they've got no depth of production. They really haven't had a second line outside of the first 3 weeks of the season that could produce anything at even strength all season long. So I don't know. And look, the trade value you're talking about for Raquel, it doesn't go away if you hang on to him.
Unless
if you have a good offseason, I mean, he's going to have value next season as well.
You hope, unless he gets injured or unless he's had injuries, right, just last year. And he's getting up there in age, so he's a depreciating asset. That would be my only argument there.
Yeah, I mean, who knows about the injury piece of it. But, I mean, I think his value would still be there. And, you know, if you're trying to bring these young guys in an environment where they can be at least competitive, and let's not forget, that I mean, there's a value to that. I mean, what we saw last night was a team that just, like, you know, they're obviously mentally they're having trouble dealing with where they're at, and it's their own fault. But, you know, they haven't been able to deal with it. Do you want your young players in your organization to be awash in losing, you know, 50 games a year for the next 3 years? Is that really where you want Grover to be? And you want Bloomquist to
You're
be?
Here
is
anyway.
That where you want them to be?
You're here anyway.
No, I don't know that. Well, they're. Let's put it this way. Let's go back a little over a month. You go from Thanksgiving till a few days after Christmas. The Penguins had put together a stretch of 15 games where they were one of the best teams. There were only a couple teams in the league who had more points. So, and they haven't made any huge roster moves since then. In fact, they've improved the roster because they got rid of one of their bigger problems in Jarry. So the team that they had for those 15 games, and again, I'm talking a few days after Christmas, that team had put together not just a good week or two, they put together a solid month. So there's something there. Like, you don't go on a stretch like that unless you're capable of being competitive, at least being competitive. Since then, now, and of course on this trip, it's all gone south. And, you know, that's the thing you have to add. You're learning about a lot of players along the way when things just go south and you have no compete. There's just no compete. There was no compete last night in the second period. None. So, you know, you're learning something about them, and you got to take that and you got to learn from it and help you make decisions going forward. But I don't think you want to put the young players in the organization who are soon going to be at the NHL level. We're talking about not only McGroarty, but, you know, you would hope Marev and Koivunen, you know, maybe Bros, but certainly Pickering will be back, Harrison Brunicki. Do you want their first 3-4 years in the NHL to be, yeah, we're going into the season, we got no shot, we've torn it down, we'll see you in 4 or 5 years. I don't think that's the way you want to go about it.
Well, it is the way I want to go about it, but we can definitely choose to disagree there. You know, like, that makes it sound like they have a choice. Yet here they are with their best efforts to remain competitive, 20 goals behind the Buffalo Sabres in goal differential in the East. They're one of the worst teams in hockey right now. So,
They are. They're not a good hockey club, and we knew this going in, but they've shown spurts of competitiveness this season. But, I mean, their inability to get through it, And in times like these, like with efforts like that coming off, you know, efforts in Anaheim and Seattle that weren't really much better. That's the thing that that Dubas has to make sure he understands is when he's talking about making draft picks and making trades for players and, you know, taking shots at guys like Tomasino and Glass and all that stuff. Look, that's fine. But for me, Joe, a lot of it isn't just what is the player's skill set that I'm acquiring or drafting. Okay. It's what is his character?
Yeah.
Like what I want the guys who get pissed off, right? And they don't quit. That's the guys I want. Like I can live with them if maybe this guy's a half a step slow or whatever the case may be. That's what they need more of. They need a lot more of that. You know, and that's like when Larson, you know, cross-checks Sid. I don't care who you are on that bench. You should be looking for Larson the next shift, and you should go take a penalty. Just go take one. Put yourself shorthanded.
Well, we definitely agree on that.
There's a spark that's missing from this group, and it was missing from last year's group, an emotion. That's what I don't see enough of. You see it on occasion. You see it occasionally. It's like everything else with this team. Occasionally, they can beat the Kings on the road. They can beat the Oilers. I mean, they played great in those games. There's just no way to equate that group being able to do that and then being able to do what you saw last night. And that, to me, doesn't come down to how fast you can skate and what are your skill levels and what's your vision of the ice. Yeah, that's all involved. But what is the character of the players you're stocking the team with? That's what they need to concentrate on, as far as I'm concerned.
On that, we agree. We're talking to Bob Grove. He's on the Sullivan Super Service fan hotline. But Grover, here's what I'm having trouble with in this conversation. You're the ultimate Penguins historian. Does history not teach us with this franchise as much as any in the history of sports that embracing, for lack of a better term, embracing the suck, being really, really bad, it has borne great things. Yeah. It got you Mario. You missed the playoffs. It got you Jágr when you missed the playoffs that year when nobody wanted to miss the playoffs. And not only, I'm not just talking about these, you know, generational lottery prizes. It also got you Fleury. It got you Malkin as the second pick. It did get you Sid. I mean, to me, Penguins history teaches me that if you're going to be bad, be really bad for a little while and then build back up. But you seem to be rejecting that notion.
No, that's the history of it. Obviously, that's the history. But, you know, they didn't embrace the suck to get Jágr. I mean, they just basically, Jágr talked his way into Pittsburgh is basically what happened in that draft, telling everybody else he wouldn't come over, right? And then he wanted to play with Mario and he wanted to play with the Penguins. And you know, so... And that team, you know, so that's different. And yes, it's happened exactly like that to get Mario and Sid. And you mentioned, you know, they're really bad. They get Flurry, and they had to make a deal to make sure that they got the number one pick in order to take them, et cetera, et cetera. Look, I'm not up enough, Joe, on the kids who are coming up. I know that, you know, when I think about Bedard and when I think about McDavid, I remember hearing about them years before. I'm not hearing about anybody who's coming up in the next year or two that fits that bill for me. Like, you're going to tear it all down to get who? And are they Lemieux or Crosby?
Are they Jordan Staal? Are they Malkin? Are they Flurry?
Flurry's a Hall of Famer. Yeah. I mean, Staal's a really good player, but he's in a different for me.
I want to be drafting in the top five as much as possible.
They might get you there, right?
I mean, in spite of themselves,
they might get you there the way they're going right now, and they might get you there without a problem. So, I mean, I just don't know that there's anybody out there in the next couple of years that you're willing to just sacrifice at all. And, you know, and let's remember, you know, when they did this with Mario, you know what happened that year. There was no draft lottery. And there was no draft lottery in the Auger year. So that adds a whole different layer to tanking. So it's like we're talking about the Hawks getting Bedard, but like, I'm just trying to remember if I remember this right, Joe, but they weren't the worst team in the league the year before. They were second or third.
Right. They made the mistake of beating the Penguins late that season, remember?
Right. Okay, so, but my point is you can tear it all down because there's a generational player coming and the timing's going to be perfect and you can lose the lottery.
Sure.
I mean, the Penguins know all about that.
They had
the number one pick the year Ovechkin was available, right? And they lost it, and everybody was up in arms. And then, you know, so they end up with Malkin. And, I mean, that was a turning point for the Penguins, Joe, because if you remember how the ping pong balls were allowed in the Crosby draft,
yeah,
had the Penguins won the lottery the year Ovechkin was available, they wouldn't have had more ping. They would never have won the lottery for Crosby. It never would have happened. So it just, like, fate just worked for them, right? It just absolutely worked for them. So they didn't get Ovechkin, but oh, by the way, the next guy's a Hall of Famer. And then because you didn't get the number one pick, you got a couple of extra ping pong balls in 05, and you got Crosby. I mean, it's just incredible fate.
Yes. I mean, it's not just for me about the generational player, although that's the Penguins' history. It's about giving myself the best chance for the best players for a 2 or 3 year stretch, at least, not just in the first round. Like, you know, they drafted Chris Letang in 2005, too. It's getting high picks in every round. I don't care about making, like, a run to be a fringe player. I don't want to live in Steelers territory right now.
I think it's okay to sink to
the bottom for 2 or 3 years is just fine.
I hear you. And I think Dubas is in the same place, is he not? Like, he's not ready to kill himself to get a team over the finish line into the playoffs so they can get swept in the first round. That's not where he's living either. So, I mean, I totally get that. And this is the thing about, and I hear you about the other picks. It's not just I hear you. So this is the thing I'm saying about the work he's done to date on the pipeline of picks. They got 28 picks in the next 3 years. 14 of those are in the top three, so half of the picks they have right now are in the first, second, or third, and they've got 7 picks that are in the first or the second. And there's more of those kind of picks coming. He's going to be moving players out. He's going to be getting more picks here at the trade deadline or in the summer. So I think that's the thing they got to keep doing, and he's got to keep doing. And then you have to make sure you assemble the scouts to pick the right players, and we just talked a little bit about what I'd be looking for there. But so I think they're on the right track with that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The higher the better. Tell me this, Grover, as the greatest numbers person in the history of Penguins hockey, when's the last time the Penguins had this few points through this many games in a season?
Yeah, well, look, Joe, every measuring stick that you put this or last year's Penguins team up against, and you want to say, when's the last time they were this bad at whatever, okay, they all go back to the same year, which is Sid's rookie year, 05-06. You know, and then that year, they had 34 points after 52 games. 34. They've got 48. So that's how bad that Holy team bird was. Milk.
Yeah.
And here's the other thing, Joe, and here's the other thing that might surprise you.
Wait, what year was Zach Grover?
05-06,
yeah.
Sid's rookie year.
Yeah.
Here's the thing that might surprise you. The second closest to this number that they're at right now, which is 48 points after 52 games, the cup year in 09. And Penguins fans will remember that, you know, they went into Toronto on a Saturday night. They got blown out. It was Therrien's last game. They were a hot mess. They were in big trouble. After 52 games that year, Joe, they had 53 points. It's very close to the number of points they have right now.
That's amazing.
That team. So what did that team need to do? They needed to fire Therrien. They brought in Bylsma. But then they got Gonchar back, who'd missed the whole season. Then they added Kunitz. They added Guerin. They added Adams. You know, they already had the goalie. They had Malkin producing at, you know, an incredible rate with Sid. You know, you had the whole thing. You had Staal. You had all that. So it's a completely different, you know, environment that it happened in. But that's the second closest to the total point total that you have today. You know, and that, I mean, what happened in 09 still just blows my mind, to be honest with you. You bring in a coach in the middle, not in the middle of the season. You bring him in late in the season, and this happens. You go from cup finalist the year before to we have to fire our coach and we're terrible. And then all of a sudden, the Penguins can't be beat. Once all those pieces got into place, that's a credit to Shiro as well, obviously.
Amazing. Grover, great stuff. Thank you for joining me. Let's do this again sooner this time.
Sounds good, Joe.
There he goes, Bob Grove.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps.
Beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring amazing special guests from the cast and crew.
After that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I love you. I love you.
They call them trolls or whatever, people that just sit behind a computer in their mom's basement.
You idiot.
It was a joke.
Hold on. Let me put my wooden teeth in so you can understand me better.
And we're sitting here again. We're sitting here again talking about the same things.
Shall I call you Ron? Dr. Dick? What should we go with
here? You can call me Ron.
Yes, indeed. It's time for the latest edition of the Limitless Express.
He's out of his damn mind.
Hop on board as Austin City Limits Bechtold takes us for a ride. Pomp is not here.
No.
He'll be back for tomorrow's show, but I'm ready, man. I'm ready. I'm on board. Have you ever taken a nice train trip, Limits?
I never have.
It's the best.
My grandparents used to take a lot of train trips. My dad did too when he was younger. They would take a train trip to Florida every couple of years.
I strongly suggest it. It's wonderful. You just sort of relax, enjoy the countryside or the city, whatever you're going through. You know, read a book. If there's a sleeping cart, you go to that. I took a train from Buffalo to Montreal once.
Was it soothing? Relaxing?
Well, soothing is a great word for a train trip. Yes.
How long was the trip?
That one was only like, I don't know, 4 hours or something, but it made bunches of stops, and it was an overnight trip.
Oh.
We got there at 12, and I was drinking at the time, so I had a wonderful time.
I'm sure. There was not last call on the train car for you.
No, there's no last call.
Not that day.
The train never closes, as they say. Go ahead.
Okay. According to our friend Nick Farabaugh of Penn Live, Steelers coaches, including GM Omar Khan, general manager, head coach Mike Tomlin, Terrell Austin, and Arthur Smith are all in attendance in Mobile at the Senior Bowl. And Khan, Tomlin, and Terrell Austin were all eyed in on defensive linemen in the first individual drills and team drills that were going on today.
Well, thank God for that. Yeah. How many guys are there?
It seems like everyone is there at the Senior Bowl, and that's further confirmation, even though it was said and confirmed yesterday. Terrell Austin and Artie Smith are still with the Steelers coaching staff. They're not going anywhere.
Did Art say during his any of his addresses yesterday that the coordinators are absolutely safe? Did I see that?
Yeah, he basically said that there was a lot of, peripheral things maybe that might get changed. Looking to see if there's anything in terms of the clips here on if there's anything going to change with the coaching staff. But no, he talked about the coaches, like, do you think that you need more coaches and stuff like that? And would you look at adding more for analytics? And really, there was a lot of pushback from Art. Probably the most pushback out of anything was being asked about coaches.
I actually agree with him on that one topic. I heard him say, I don't think that's the problem. And I agree.
I just don't see that holding us back. I don't think that's our problem.
Yeah, I don't either, Art. And getting better ones might be, though. Why the coordinators are safe, other than money reasons, I have no idea. Like, you're still going to let Mike run the defense with a de facto coordinator, a figurehead coordinator? What are we doing?
Here's what Art had to say, this back and forth here.
Art, did you say half the staff was in place? Is that the way you said the coaching staff?
I didn't say half. I said, good chunk of the staff.
So are those the ones that are under contract?
Yeah.
Is that the way you look at it?
Yeah.
Are any of those, would you consider getting, if some of those have to change, you change them?
I mean, that's still kind of the process we're going through.
Yeah, I'm sensing that they're safe. And as John Tortorella once posted in the Tampa Bay locker room, safe is death. Next.
Jalen Milroe's hands have been measured, Joe.
Yeah.
It was a huge deal with Kenny Pickett's hands a couple years ago.
Or a very small deal, depending on how you look at it, yes.
Well, it must be a small deal for Jalen Milroe, too. He has eight and three quarter inch hands, according to reports out of Mobile. No starting NFL quarterback in 2024 had hands smaller than 9 inches.
Are they smaller than Pickett's?
Among the smallest, former Steelers first-round pick Kenny Pickett and the only current Steelers quarterback Skylar Thompson has hands of eight and five-eighths inches.
I miss little toddler hands, don't you? Did you see him take the last snap? I'm surprised he didn't drop it with hands that small.
I was getting a little Eagles concerned game? In the cold that maybe the ball would slip.
What if your hands shrink even more? He wouldn't even have hands.
No, he'd be one of those blow-up doll things, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Like car dealerships that just kind of flare in the air.
Exactly.
And their hands are just kind of waving around, not knowing, where you're going.
My temptation is to say it's not a big deal. Joe Burrow had small hands, but I'm not so sure about that. Now I'm concerned about Jalen Milroe. I don't want to bring in the second version of toddler hands here. We're going to be feeding people, in height chairs. What are we going to be doing? Like we did with Kenny Pickett, where they would walk him around the facility in a stroller with a little bonnet and his baba in? No, I don't want this
again.
And
he needs to stretch out his hands to try to extend them as much as possible with his hand workouts. And
what do you call the thing you put above a baby that they look at? A wheel? Some what's that thing? The thing
I know
that hangs
what you're
from
talking
the ceiling.
About. Yeah.
It hangs from the ceiling.
Like the Mobile.
Mobile.
That's where
Alabama.
They are, Mobile. Yeah.
Right. They should buy him a Mobile.
Should they get one for Milroe? He's already halfway there. He's in Mobile. Does he need a Mobile in Mobile?
I don't want another baby quarterback. Thank you.
Does he need an automobile to get him to the Senior Bowl?
Yeah. Next.
All right. So that is that. I'll throw in a slight basketball thing for you here.
If Tomlin takes him out for dinner, are they going to have mushed peas and things like that and carrots?
Maybe he can go out with
Dean
peas.
No, I don't.
How about
that's pretty good?
Yeah.
What did they do with Pickett?
Speaking of Dean Pease,
did they take Pickett out for apples and a bottle of milk
carrots?
Or something? Right.
According to Jalen Milroe, I guess he told people at the Senior Bowl
yesterday. Those little pieces of toast that babies have, those little biscuits.
He grew up a Ravens fan.
Who did?
Jalen Milroe.
Did he?
Yes. He's a Ravens fan.
I'll tell you this
fan.
Much about him. He's wildly talented. That's inarguable.
I'll tell you something else about him. He's wildly inconsistent. That's inarguable.
He's wildly inaccurate. I know.
I want nothing to do with Jalen Milroe. I know he's athletic, but he can't do it from the pocket. Those games that he had against Vanderbilt and Oklahoma scared me off, where he just
once
did
upon
nothing.
A time Josh Allen was inaccurate too. Limits.
Uh-huh.
Only his
while
hands
playing
are
for
bigger.
Wyoming instead of with a bunch of five stars in the SEC for a program that's one of the best of all time in college football.
Next.
The NCAA National Championship in basketball has changed the start time, and I think it was intending to make fans happier, but it's kind of made fans a little bit madder. What do I mean by that? The 25 National Championship game will now tip off at 8:50 p.m. Eastern, and they announce 30 minutes earlier than the typical start time. So maybe the NCAA is thinking, yay, earlier for people. The comments are still going ballistic about how it's a 30-minute time change at 9 o'clock at night. Remember college football had this problem too, and then they changed it to 7:30?
Yeah.
Why would basketball just not look in the mirror and look at college football and say, hey, 7:30 is a better time, more eyes on it. Why are they just catering to the West Coast here, it seems? 9 o'clock?
I don't know about more eyes on it. These people are very smart. I think they're doing it at the optimal time where they can get the most eyes on it. I hate it. Because it's so late at night. It just seems stupid. And yeah, people are right, a half hour difference, but at least it's a half hour. I'm not going to complain about that.
It was stupid that it was starting at 9:30 to begin with.
Ridiculous limits.
Absolutely insane.
Next.
A small architecture group is making a pitch for a new Commander's stadium at the RFK site. So it's a long shot effort, but they think that they want to try to influence more conversations about the site.
Guess what I saw? The Grateful Dead in their final show at RFK Stadium with my friend Rich Williams.
What was RFK like?
Just a rundown old shack at that point, but you could
also basically FedEx Field.
You could also feel the history of RFK.
Yeah.
I mean, it was pretty awesome in a way. I also saw somebody get their windshield smashed in after that, sadly. They'd hemmed in somebody else. So I watched this very violent man smash somebody's windshield. And was scared to do anything.
You know what I always wondered going back and watching old Steeler games from the 70s? They parked cars on the sideline, like in the end zone, like on where like the warning track would be for baseball. Why were there cars there? I mean, seriously,
wait,
why did
park
they
cars?
There were cars
where?
On the field,
at
like
Three
not,
Rivers,
at Three Rivers, like in the background. Well,
it's
by
not
the
like
stands.
People came to the game and parked their car on the field,
right? But whose car are they, and why is it there?
They were giveaway cars. Maybe it was the groundskeepers. That's a great question.
Why
actually.
Were the cars there? Seriously,
I don't know.
Were they a war? Like, was it Ford? You know how they do that truck giveaway for the Steelers every year, and they have like a truck in
been.
The end zone.
Sure, it might
like,
have
is that
been.
What it was?
Yeah.
But why was it on like the? Why was it on the edge of the field?
You're asking the wrong guy, and I'm tired.
I hope the texters know that. I never understand that. I never understood why that was the case. And then sometimes, like, players are running into the cars and trying to make sure that they, you know, if they're running after a pass and they're out of bounds, they don't hit the car. It's probably like 10, 15 yards off the field, but still, I always wondered that. So I got into a rabbit hole last night of watching future stadiums in the NFL and the MLB that are planned by different franchises.
Yeah.
And I've come to the conclusion that everyone is going to build either an open-air stadium or a dome. There are, like, no concepts for an outside stadium now by, like, anybody.
Wait. An open-air stadium or a dome? What other choice is there?
So, well, what I mean by that is SoFi Stadium is technically an outside stadium. Because they call it an open-air stadium.
Yeah.
And what that means by that, when I was out at SoFi.
So half open, half closed type deal?
So the playing surface is covered and the stands are covered.
Yeah.
But when you walk in, you're outside. And when you like walk through the concourse and get to your seat, you feel like you're inside.
So half inside,
still,
half outside.
Yeah,
so not a true outdoor stadium.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. They're ruining football.
Now, they were talking about this in – it wasn't – Tennessee, it was somewhere else where they were saying, well, they're building this brand new stadium, and because it's still like an outdoor open air stadium, they can't hold like a Final Four there because it's still technically like outside. So that's why the Browns are building just a complete dome at their stadium. They want to build a dome in Brook Park, I think it is, and leave the city of Cleveland, which has been a big problem. So, yes, it seems like we're going all towards either domes or half-outside stadiums that are going to be, like, temperature-controlled.
I got one for you. You ready?
Yes.
Paul Skeens sharing the cover of a new MLB video game. How do you like that? A limitless wonder.
Is he officially going to be on it? Like, I know it's
I don't know. It's our website has a headline on it. Are we lying to people?
No, we're not. Oh, there. I didn't see that. There it is. Because there was speculation yesterday because Skeens was like, hey, you know, I'm challenging this and this for the show. So I was wondering, like, is he going to actually be on the cover? And yeah, MLB just put out there. You're
constantly
2025.
Questioning me. Constantly doubting me, you are.
No,
you're
I like doubted my myself.
You're like my daughter. Dad is never right. I'm reading off the headline from our own website.
You sound like my
wonder.
Dad in our own house. Ray is never right.
Ray is never
gets any
right.
credit. Or he says, I'm always right, and nobody gives him credit. I don't know, one way or the other.
MLB The Show 25, correct?
Yes, yeah, says that your 2025 cover stars are Paul Skeens, Ellie De La Cruz, and Gunnar Henderson. How about that?
I'm all over this, and as I've mentioned to you many times, I'm wavering. The way the world has gone, the future's for us all. I'm thinking of ways to permanently numb myself, and video games seems to be a good way. I want to get some incredible system in my man cave with like a movie screen and then just play entire seasons of college football and NBA and pro football and MLB The Show. I'm all about it, and I just want to numb myself forever. At least part of me does.
You've been talking about getting this console and playing video games and having like a station event for like a year now.
I know. I'm afraid to because that's literally what would happen. I have an addictive personality. And
yeah, we haven't seen that with golf.
I'm the type of person who, you know, I could go to a party or you and I could go to a game and all I'd be thinking about, tragically, I acknowledge, is how I'm going to do in the video game that night, you know, against the 75 Reds if I play them. What kind of pitches am I going to use? Can I really go into Columbus in a snow game on NCAA football as the University Buffalo Bulls and pull the upset? I think about these things in my addiction. I don't want to go there. I don't want to do it. Yet part of me really would love to just sink myself in video games until the day I die.
Well, you know what they say, it's not about the car, it's all about the driver, Joe. If you have the control in your hands and you can dictate what happens in the game, you might be able to pull it off as your University of Buffalo Little Bills, I know that they're not called that, in Columbus and beat the Buckeyes.
Can we play against each other?
Yeah.
For your house to my house?
No, I don't have a console.
Well, get one.
Too expensive. I don't have a lot of time
I'll
to play video
one.
Games either.
See, this is my addictive
now,
personality
I do
coming
wanna,
up. I'll buy you one.
I do want to play.
As long as you play the game with me, I'll buy you anything you want.
I do want to play college football because I'm very excited for this next year's Penn State season. And
you
speaking
just spent
of them,
all that money on going to see a Penn State game. You could have spent it on a console.
I'd much rather go to the games and watch the game and have the memories of the game than play video games.
That's because you're a healthy young man without an addictive personality.
I try my best. Well, now I have an unhealthy obsession on watching this upcoming college football season because ESPN has put out their projected 12-team field for the college football playoff next year.
Yeah.
And who they think is going to win. Who do you think ESPN predicts to win the national championship?
Listen, I saw somebody had a way too early top 25 and Penn State was number one. Are they picking
that
Penn State?
That was Joel Klatt. And ESPN projects Penn State to win the national championship beating Georgia.
Holy bird milk.
They would beat... they'd play Notre Dame as the number 2 seed and beat Notre Dame, the revenge against Notre Dame. Then play the number 3 seed being Utah, and this is assuming Penn State wins the Big Ten. And then Penn State and Georgia in the national championship game. And Penn State people are already saying, look, we like to help hype ourselves up, but even this is too much for us to be able to process and handle.
Do you know what the most watched TV show in all of history is outside of a Super Bowl?
Friends.
Wrong. I'm talking one episode of one show.
I think I actually know the answer to this. It's
wrong.
It was the season finale or the series finale of Cheers?
Wrong.
Gilligan's Island?
Excuse
MASH.
Me.
It was the season finale of
yes,
the series finale
right.
of MASH.
It was the
See, I knew that.
It was February 28th, 1983, meaning I was probably drunk. And it was the last show of MASH. 105 million people watched it.
That's insane.
On CBS. And that's only 11th all time. All the other top 10 in the history of America watch TV shows are Super Bowls, including, what was this one? The number one watch Super Bowl, the number one watch show in the history of America was last year's Super Bowl. Can you believe that, Limitless Wonder?
No, I cannot believe that at all, to be honest.
Do you know what the watch show outside of a Super Bowl was?
Super Bowl between the Seattle Seahawks and the Patriots.
No. The first Clinton-Trump presidential debate. Unless you include Gulf War coverage. But I guess it was one night, January 16th, 1991, 86 million people. Then it was Clinton-Trump first presidential debate. Then it was Dallas whodunit episode. Then it was Carter Reagan, his fifth all-time presidential debate. Then, oh, Limitless Wonder, it was One for the Road, the Cheers finale. Then it was the 94 Olympics ladies singles figure skating final. Was that the, what's her name? What are both of their names? And Nancy Kerrigan and Tonya Harding?
Yes.
It was?
I think so.
Have you seen I, Tonya, the show about her?
No, I've heard about it, but I haven't seen
brilliant
it.
Brilliant acting, brilliant movie. You should watch it. And in fact, you should spend more of your time watching movies. Very disappointed in how little you watch movies.
How little I watch movies?
What's the day after? That's number eight all time. What is that?
I think it's some type of TV show.
Thanks.
I guess. I don't know.
That's the topic, is TV shows most watched all time.
I still can't believe you've never seen the second movie of Back to the Future.
You have Malzy disease, which is you can't admit when there's something you don't know. You just say, I don't know. I don't know what it could be. You think you know something about the day after, so like Malzy, you try to throw in something you know about.
You tell me that. What about the time
that TV show?
What about the time that you tell me that if I don't know what it is, or if I say I'm wrong, then I'll just easily admit that.
You should do that. You should have just said I don't know what the day after is.
I have no idea what the day after is.
Neither do I. And even after reading about it, I still don't know.
The texters are letting us know that the cars in the at Three River Stadium for the Steeler games. Is that Chrysler had an agreement with the Steelers and could show new cars behind the end zone in 78 and 79.
That is incredible.
And that Lynn Swann actually jumped over one of the cars.
I do remember that. I think that was against Denver in the playoffs, as I recall. Is that right?
I knew I'd seen it before.
The day after postulates a fictional war between NATO and the Warsaw Pact over Germany that rapidly escalates into full-scale nuclear exchange between U.S. and Soviets. Holy horse milk. How did we not watch this? Limits. Huh?
You know, I was too busy watching NCIS and reruns of Suits to be able to tell.
Oh, I was watching MASH. It's the greatest show ever. I don't feel well.
I think Friends is the greatest show ever.
I think I expended all my energy in those first two rants today that took up like a half hour each. And now I don't feel well. All I want is a Diet Coke and then to go to sleep.
How many people watched the Friends finale?
Millions, I would imagine.
That was the greatest comedy ever. That or maybe Cheers.
I like Friends.
52.5 million watched the Friends finale.
76 watched the Seinfeld finale. We have to go.